Hello and welcome to We're Watching What? I'm your host Dana, or the DHK as I'm known, and three things up for review this week. We're starting off with the fourth episode of She-Hulk Attorney at Law on Disney+, and then we're watching the third episode of Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power on Amazon Prime, and then finally the new reimagining, and I'm putting that in air quotes, of Pinocchio, also on Disney+. Major spoiler alert for all those things, and then be sure to stay tuned after the main discussion, as there are a couple of quick follow-up points, and without further ado, here's We're Watching What? All right, episode four of She-Hulk. We are now caught up. We are at the same place. How did we feel about this week's episode? It was Madison, the return of Madison with two whatever ends and a Y and not where you think, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I find her humorous. I didn't like it as much as I liked episode three.
Okay.
It hasn't like changed my feeling about the show in a negative way or anything like that. But yeah, I thought three was the most fun so far
okay.
that I've had watching it.
Jackie?
Yeah, I'm still very much enjoying myself, having a good time. The Madison character was fun. I thought that, I mean, I'm glad the internet's like obsessed with it and all the good stuff, but I thought like she was just drunk every single time. And I kind of wanted to, I don't know. I mean, it got a little old for me, I guess.
Not to shade the actress, but I feel like she's in a different scene than like Wong is half the time, and not because it was written that way, but because she's like not playing it that way, you know.
I was reading it as like the point though,
but I think there's a way to do it that like makes it feel natural, and that she is, you know, he's like furniture there essentially, but every once in a while she engages with him because she wants his, you know, approval or whatever it is, or she wants something from him. But just the way the actress does it for me is so hollow that I'm like, oh, I don't believe there's a reason that Wong would continue to hang out with her based on her performance.
Oh, yeah. I don't believe that he would hang out with her, but I believe that she would try to become a leech on his side. I don't believe he would allow it. But
right. Yeah. But yeah. I think there's a way that there's just this like charismatic people who like, you know, glom onto your life that do.
Where
and she's yeah. She's just not reading that way to me.
You could imagine there's a way she could have done it where you could imagine why he would entertain her.
Right. Yes.
I see.
Well, yeah. I feel like it's a sort of similar character. Oh my God, I'm going to forget the character's name. You know, in Ted Lasso, the like girlfriend, and she ends up being like a PR person for them and like getting with one of the football stars. She was with the asshole football star the first season.
Yeah. You know Temple. I just don't remember her name in the show.
Keely. Keely is her name.
Keely. Yeah, there we go. It reminds me of Keely, but Keely does this. I mean, obviously Keely has more substance because she's in more, so it's hard, it's like an apples to orange thing. But I was kind of thinking that she does a good job of being sort of this charismatic, loud, whatever person, but then also manages to make you feel like you're in on it kind of. And anyway, I don't think Madison did as well there, but I mean, I laughed the, you know, the first time we saw her at least.
And she has barely anything to work with really, like she's in
comedies,
you know. But yeah, I mean, I you know, I found her more humorous for me than I've been finding a lot of the show. Mm-hmm. I haven't been laughing at the show at large very much, but I was like chuckling at her, whatever. And you know, she did maybe bring us as close to Mephisto as we've ever been, or
this
maybe
is true.
Ever will
yes.
be.
Yep, yep. <You know? laughs> She did make a deal with a demon. Yep.
Well, and he was a goat that talked, and he wanted drops of her blood in exchange, and she remembered his name maybe being Jake, and Mephisto has gone by Jack the Scratch for many.
Oh, didn't know that. Okay.
Many a time. So she could be misremembering, you know, that, but I thought that was a fun little thing. Cause now we're at the point where she's clearly talking about Mephisto because they're writing it this way on purpose. Cause it's like of what the fandom has, myself included, has been saying since WandaVision. Yes. So it is, you know what I mean? Like whether we ever see him or not remains to be seen, but it is, it seems that is him or something, you know, that they want us to think is him.
I have a personal disdain for magicians, bad ones at least. And so I very much enjoyed the premise of this. And yeah, you know, there were questions that like the episode managed to answer for me, thankfully, because I was like, how does this guy have the little sling ring thing? And I was like, okay, fine. Yeah. You know, like why is this happening? Why is that? But I was like, why would Wong call upon She-Hulk and not a more experienced hero at this point?
I hated that.
His Rolodex is
pretty deep at this thing. And it's not like physical limitations are in place where he's like, oh my God, you're the nearest one.
No, and it's like demon creatures. It's not like something that it's like, oh, well, you know, because she did this before. It was like this woman who's not trained to fight at all. I guess because she's involved in the case already. So it was like, but it still was
I think he wanted a legal precedence or something. But
oh no, I'm talking about once the goblins show up and he's like, he interrupts her date.
Yeah, the
legal reason, absolutely. Yeah. But when the goblins show up and he cock blocks her, basically,
I was like, you're not even gonna
rude.
You literally just bring a couple of your students from Carmitage. At that point, it's actually effectively deal. That was so silly, but whatever. But it was just it was one of those things. Okay.
We're gonna take a quick break and be right back. And we're back.
I really liked the date, though.
Yes.
I almost died when he was like, do you want to split fries? I was yes, because I do. Yeah.
I was I do not want to split fries. I want my own fries. And
well, yeah. But
okay, but you know, the idea of adding fries to a meal
is what's nice, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I was happy. I think we've talked about this in previous ones, but the Marvel Universe is relatively chaste. And so I was like, yeah, She-Hulk, get it on. Get your groove on. Get that groove back. Although the premise of the concept of somebody rejecting human her in the morning, I was like, yeah, she's not, okay. This is a slight stretch.
She's not Frumpty Dumpty or anything. It's
I get it, though. His kink is She-Hulk, so whatever.
Exactly,
Well, I kind of feel I feel like she should have, I don't know. Yeah.
It's clearly
it's kind of unfair to wake up with a different body and expect.
Oh, it's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. No matter how attractive you are, I think it's just kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's just going to have to deal with being fetishized because that's what's her story at this point, right? In life, it's she's going to run into that in the dating game.
Yes, which ironically, I was like, that, you want to talk about true themes? That was, hit
it's
deep.
A real...
I was like, ouch.
Yeah, no, it's a real, real thing, right?
100%.
And so, yeah, and then the magician thing was fun. I was annoyed that they named him Donny Blaze because I, everyone else, probably thought they said Johnny at first. But it was Donny, and I don't know.
It felt like the perfect magician name to me. It's absolutely what a magician would be called.
It did, but when you have a character in the MCU or in the Marvel Universe that people want in the MCU named Johnny Blaze, it seems very
okay. Well, when you have a goat demon that they want in the MCU, the show is clearly toying with.
Oh, I know. That's what I'm saying. Seemed very intentional, and I was a little okay. But
I think I read something. I have to verify it, but his the guy who plays his assistant, he's 107 years old, something absolutely wild like that. He's very old.
No, oh, wow.
Which I was like, good for you.
You're in She-Hulk.
Why not? You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's impressive. All right. Well, we are now at the same point in the series. So surprises from me from this point onwards. We'll see how we're all, I did enjoy Titania. That's how.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a fun.
No. Somebody posted a thing that was it's not Titania, the fairy queen. Oh. And I was like, oh my God. Now every time I felt confident in saying it before. And now when I say it out loud, I was like, wait.
Yeah, it's titanium.
Yeah, titanium.
Yeah.
I love the idea of an IP infringement happening. This is absolutely hilarious to me.
Yeah, she's totally. Her off screen presence, out of show presence, and the looming, whatever, that she's probably my favorite thing about the whole show. I care more about that silly, what she's doing than I so far am invested in Jen. I'm so I just think it's so funny.
Did you two see the clip for next week? Or the little, there was a little thing where there's a fake ad for She-Hulk by Titania.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. So we're, and this is why, Matt, a couple of weeks ago, you'd be like, oh, I hope she comes back. I was like, don't worry, she'll be back.
The marketing around the show remains the best marketing I think they've done yet. And I think Rip is also better, personally think is better than the show. But I like the show, but I think the marketing is just really, really good.
Well, or it's leading us into even better things, so.
Oh, yeah, totally. But the intrigue they're building around that in the fun way on social and her social handle on Twitter, and she's verified, and the bus. We talked about the bus stop, ads and billboards. Just the whole thing that the way they're approaching it has been very on point. And then I think I'm assuming you both saw it, but when we had been at Disney for a sec there. We're at California. I forgot to point out that I saw that they have the bus stop there too. And I was like, I hope that just stays forever, because that's Avengers Campus. So why not? You know, like right there. So I was like, oh, that's really cool. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll continue to see what surprises are in store for us.
Now, Dana, is this, I assume maybe because spoilersville and stuff, but is this now going to be like appointment viewing for you? Like, is it like first thing in the morning Wednesday you're watching this?
I think it is because of spoilers. Because
of spoilers.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to think back to myself. I was like, when does this show end?
Yeah. I think, oh no, it's Thursday. Sorry. Thursday.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, what day of the week, what day do I have to be like on my guard now?
Yeah.
And so I think at least, yeah. But that's the problem with all the Marvel, just any of these Disney Plus shows or any of these appointment things, even Lord of the Rings, we'll talk about in a minute, but it's, you know, forcing me back into, because I'm on social media so much, unfortunately, that I just feel obligated.
Yeah, it is. I've noticed with She-Hulk, because I've been watching it usually Thursday night, sometimes Friday, and I've noticed I've managed to avoid, but I don't know if it's also because I don't care enough to like really like pay attention when I see something as I'm scrolling, but I don't know.
I also feel like thus far, there has not been anything in it that
if
it got spoiled for you, you'd be devastated by.
Well, and nothing crazy they hadn't already teased in trailers and stuff, you know what I mean? Like if I was spoiled by the eventual appearance of Daredevil, it would be like heartbreaking, but
yes but they were very upfront about that, so again thus far, but you know, we're entering the next grouping or chapter of it, and so it could be so, but but speaking of things that keep getting spoiled, but not, you know, in a kind of weird way, like I'm not as upset by, is Rings of Power. I thought this was the most exciting episode for me so far. Are we still loving it? Is that, I assume?
Yeah.
Holds true.
I'm obsessed with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I've watched this episode numerous times.
I think the quality is really great. I don't know. I mean, there's no complaints from my end. You know, I'm enjoying my time.
At Comic-Con, they showed some of the elf fighting sequence, etc. And I was like, what?
Oh, the warg.
No, they didn't show the warg, actually.
I was like, which elf fighting scene?
The flying through the air with the chains and all that stuff. And I was just like, okay, what's... That part to me dragged a little bit. I very much liked being in... Were we in Numenor? Where were we? Yes. Okay, Numenor.
Yes, we were.
For me, it still feels like, for me, I'm the most invested in Galadriel's story. Like, I like all of the stories, but Galadriel's story is the one that I'm the most invested in, the most I care about. Followed by, man, I never remember. What's the Black Elf's name?
Rondir.
Rondir. I really like him a lot, too. And, like, the stuff that's going on with
him. I feel like Galadriel is, like, the gateway to all the key things that we're familiar with, especially, you know, given our knowledge base of it. So I'm more invested, but I'm really am more invested in like Isildur and his family's drama now.
I was going to say,
I'm
loving Elendil, and that casting is like spot on.
Yes, I love whoever that is.
He's incredible. And it's funny. I'm invested in, I guess, things that are supplement, like the things, like you said, Dana, kind of, but the things that Galadriel's doings are kind of unlocking. If being fascinated and wanting to live in Numenor and watch everything in Numenor means I'm invested in Galadriel's story, then so be it. But what Galadriel is actually doing, I'm not very invested in right now. But what we're seeing because of where she's going, I'm super invested. So like Queen Muriel, oh my God. Like, and that her performance I mean, she was giving me Rachel Weisz in The Fountain as the Spanish Queen. Like, it was like this very, the way she was talking and everything, I was like, oh my God, I love this woman. I don't know who she is, but I know the character, but the actress, I'm not sure. But
yeah, so she's Queen Regent. Who is there a deposed king?
So her, because he's the one who's in exile in his tower. That's her father.
Oh, it's and her so, father. Okay.
So remember, he got exiled because of...
So in Numenor, the people are split between the king's men and the faithful. Uh-huh. And so the faithful are still faithful to the ways of the elves that they were defending, they were fighting with along in the War of Wrath against Morgoth. Mm-hmm. The king's men have decided... F the elves, they think they're better than us, we hate them, blah, blah, blah. And so they are the ones who are no longer, they're the reason that, like, they're mad that Galadriel's there and stuff, right? And so her father, the king, Tar Palantir, that might sound familiar to you, but he is a faithful. And so the people were rising up against. And so
So there was basically like a usurping, and this queen regent has managed to.
Well, and so she's his daughter. And so now it's like, as the viewer, we're questioning her, like her allegiance. And Tolkien's notes and stuff on this, like in the stories, have been very kind of differing from time to time. So like, I truly don't know exactly what they're going to go with in the show. But that guy who you see with her in the blue, his name's Ar-Pharazôn, but he is her cousin. And in some versions, they're like married as cousins, which is gross. But he is like the Kingsmen leader. And I think that my theory is that she and her father devised this plan to make her seem like she's for the Kingsmen to keep their power in the throne, so that like Ar-Pharazôn couldn't like.
Well, she obviously goes to him at the end to talk to him about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean that she's not one of the Kingsmen.
No, agreed. But I feel like it's just like a really big hint that she's not.
Yeah, I think she's I think she's one of the faithful. And I think obviously the way she's treating Elendil and having the conversation, I love their conversation. It's one of my favorite scenes. It makes me think that it's like, okay, she's kind of like seeking him out as like a potential, you know, what he eventually becomes that we know of. I mean, when we see him in Lord of the Rings, he's the king.
Right.
So we know that, you know. And so, I don't know exactly. That's a long time from now. So I don't know exactly how.
How we get there. Yeah.
I also don't know. I mean, they haven't really addressed. They went into the history of Numenor a bit with Elrond and Elros and that kind of stuff, right? But we don't really know. These are the Dúnedain, right? This is where Aragorn comes from. But we don't know, like, how long in the show they're saying their lives are.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the books it's like 300 years, which would make no sense that they are there at the foots of Mount Doom fighting.
Right.
Against Sauron. But.
Except for we know one of them's going to be there.
Well, we know Isildur. Yeah, we know they have to be. And so they're compressing the timeline a lot, obviously. Mm-hmm. But so I don't know. But I loved seeing Numenor and that big Erendil statue kind of like welcoming everybody in. Like I got like brought a tear to my eye. I was like, I love this. I want to live there.
Yeah, I was.
I still don't really care about the Harfoots that much. I mean, we'll see. Maybe.
Yeah, I like the stranger. Like whoever's playing the stranger, I'm really enjoying his performance. But
I think he's doing a good job.
You are.
But I'm still like, I'm mostly like, I like all the other stuff going on a lot more. Like I just want to hang out with the elves mostly.
Yeah, I want to go back to the dwarves.
I'd love to go back to the dwarves, see what's going
on. I think we're supposed to next week. I watched the little, which I guess is a good sign, right? Where I was like, what happens next week?
Yeah. I like the, I'm excited to get back to Khaz Ad-Dûm there with the dwarves, but I think I'm into the stranger. I'm nervous about who he is, obviously, but I'm into finding out more and how that happens. I found that all the stuff with them in this episode, I quite liked it actually. I like when he was giving the speech about all the ones left behind, and we find out that Nori's friend is like an orphan because her parents didn't make it and stuff. I was like, oh, this is really sad. And I think Nori is just a really good actress. Like, I just think she's doing a good job at what she's been. Task to do here, and so I'm invested in her, and I don't know that they'll do it, but it's like I said last week, if that stranger turns out being a Balrog or something bad, I like this idea of like the hobbits like it's helping usher in this doom. And that we might see these Harfoots by the end of this second age settling down in the Shire and realizing that like they need to not be out there because it's like they're not capable of handling you know what I mean, and then Frodo kind of coming back and reverse, like flipping that on its head, that idea on its head, and saying like, no, we're not all just f ups, you know, like we can go out here and
although completely like without the knowledge that is
totally.
It's, you know, I realize why I brought up the stupid elf fight scene is because at the end of it, finding out we're gonna get somebody whose name sounds like one of the names that Sauron goes by, so it feels like another red herring.
Yeah, it's weird because his name, they called him Adar,
right?
And that was the name of the episode too, which was like. Okay.
But that's a new character, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, I've never known him by that name, but Annatar is his elf form. And they also.
Yeah, so it sounded like close-ish. I was like, yeah.
Well, and the elves with Arondir down there, like they said something about like the orcs referring to Sauron in Elvish, which was odd. And so it's like, okay, so clearly Sauron at this point is an elf. And the guy approaching screen at the end kind of looked elfish, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It felt like they were teasing it in such a way where they want you to assume it's Sauron that it must not be, but I can't imagine what else.
I also feel like they want you. They were setting up the stranger to possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just all.
they want you to be guessing, but then they showed us that person in the trailers that feels like it has to be Annatar, but it could not be. I don't have no idea. But yeah, so I'm intrigued by what they're doing there. I'm really hoping. I know that I think some people have some theories that Halbrand is Sauron. I hope not.
Oh, ooh. Wait. I thought they kind of said who Halbrand is.
Well, he has that sigil that shows that he's supposed to be the king of the men of the Southland, and he's running away from it.
Oh.
In Aragorn fashion. But again, he said, I found this on the body of a dead man. And he kind of goes with the story. But some people think, I think, that like he could be doing this to get a closeness with Galadriel that kind of gets him a front row seat into Gil-galad and Celebrimbor, who are kind of otherwise unreachable for someone who's not.
Oh, that he, I don't know, that that seems quite the plot to like be like, I'm gonna find this woman on the open sea and then,
well, no, he knows who Galadriel is, and so I just mean he might, I agree but I don't know it's like if Sauron was trying to come across her somehow, but yeah, I agree, it seems kind of strange, but I'm still sticking with I think he could be the Witch King. But
sure,
I had another random thought though. What if he becomes the king under the mountain in Return of the King?
Could be interesting.
Ooh. Oh, the betrayer.
People, the betrayers.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That I like
someone,
that.
I think he's someone notable, you know.
Yeah, he must be.
It would make me a little, like, I kind of hope, because he is a charming character. Like, I like whoever the actor is. I think it's very, like, mm-hmm. And so, it would be a great performance to, you know, betray us and have us, you know, lulled into this false sense of security and stuff like that. But part of me just likes him a lot and wants him to not be a bad guy.
Yeah, part of me wants that, but another part of me feels like him ultimately eventually betraying Galadriel is going to lead to her stiffness mm-hmm. a little bit, well, along with other things. But right now, her character is so kind of like one note
boring
to me, and very, yeah, she's just very, mm-hmm. they're portraying her very like Feanor in the First Age, who made the Silmarils, obviously, but they're portraying her like just one-track mind, cannot be talked or persuaded in any other way, and blah, blah, blah. And I know it's about showing us how she becomes who she is in the Third Age.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, I like her, and I like the actress, but so far I'm just kind of like, oh my God, you're such a Gryffindor that it's really hard for me. Like,
hey,
it's just
hey,
very like, I don't know, not, I'm sorry, but I have a hard time with the hardcore Gryffindor sometimes. It's just, it's hard for me. And she's very much that right now. She's very like Eowyn, but with less like complexity at the moment.
Well, Eowyn is, film Eowyn is not one of my favorite characters, so.
I like her, but
I really, really like, I don't know, I'm really liking Galadriel here. I'm enjoying it. I'm having a good time. I like watching her kick ass and be right and no one believing her, you know. So, I'm excited to see more and see where it goes and all that good stuff. But having said that, I don't have the same knowledge you have about her and what she's going to do and all that stuff either. So it's possible.
Well, I don't. There's a thing, because she hasn't been written about at length in this age. So this version of Galadriel has never been written about. Like, they've talked about, you know, her existence, you know, like highlights of her, who she is. But the thing is like what they're doing in this show is like they're making her out. They're showing her and Elrond as like younger, but they are already thousands of years old. So they are already like, when we see them in the Third Age, they're not like much older.
Petulant children. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the Third Age is like 1,000 years away in the books, and in their lifetime, so they're doing this thing where they're kind of making them more early 20s into 30s people, and in people form, you know, and then we're seeing the 40 to 50 year olds in, like, you know.
Right.
And so I don't know, like, what this whole warrior Galadriel is unprecedented.
Yeah.
It's not impossible that it was what happened in Tolkien's mind. It's just not what he wrote about.
Right. It's like he gave us A and B, and then they're filling in how we're getting there.
Exactly. And there's the lines of, like, you know, Sauron thought that she would be his chief adversary and all this whatever. But I think people have always kind of interpreted that, because she's the most, like, powerful elf that ends up ever being alive. So mm-hmm. I think people interpret that as, like, in sorcery rather than,
right,
you know, necessarily. But, you know, we see her, even in those shitty Hobbit movies, we see her really be the one who, like, she banishes him to the void, or she thinks she does. Well, she does. But, you know, we see her, like, kick major ass there, but it's through magic. And I think we're going to see her as she kind of unlocks her magic.
More of her abilities, yeah.
You know?
It's a latent elfin life puberty, magical puberty.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'm living for it. And honestly, I think of storylines that I'm most eager to get back to, aside from being in Numenor, in this episode, I'm really invested in the Arondir thing. I want to know what those orcs are doing. I mean, I have to believe they're trying to find that blade that the kid has, and they're, mm-hmm. you know, but like, if it was so simple as like, oh, they're just trying to go to Mordor. It's like, well, why don't you just travel at night and hide in the day? So there's more. There has to be more.
Yeah.
Oh, and Jed Brophy was in it. He was the really cool looking orc who said Adar's name to
how do you
Arondir.
Know who is
I saw him in the I saw him in the credits, but Jed Brophy, I mean, he's like Nori in The Hobbit, and he's a bunch of different orcs in Lord of the Rings. Like, he's been in all the he's done a lot of Tolkien stuff. So I didn't know he was gonna be in this actually. But I saw the credits, his name, and I was like, oh my god.
The only stunt performer I know is Salah Baker, who was the Uruk-hai, because he's in all of those.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but Jed
Brophy, all the behind the scenes.
Jed Brophy, I mean, obviously in The Hobbit, he's a hobbit, but then, or I mean, a dwarf, but he's the one who's like, yeah, why can't we have some meat in Two Towers? And some other orcs and stuff, but yeah, he seems fun. But I love that, I mean, I don't know, but there's clearly all these like pale orcs and stuff, and they're really playing up the sunlight thing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it could be cheesy and dumb, but I feel like we're going to see as they become the orcs we see.
Oh, 100%. I was hoping so. I mean, that's so cool.
They're so clearly pale in this on purpose, you know, like decidedly.
Yeah. Well, we always knew it was like tortured elves or whatever. So it's interesting if we get to watch them kind of descend into madness or whatever.
That's my current fear for Arondir's fate.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that's what's going to happen, but I hope not. You know, like, I want him to escape because I love him and I, you know, don't want him. But I also think watching him become dark would be really interesting, too.
Basically, we all we want for the show is corruption.
Well, I think it's part of one of those things where you kind of know it's all you're going to get, right? It's like watching, it's almost like watching like Clone Wars stuff, like prequel Star Wars, where it's like, you know how this all goes.
Right, right. So it and, has
like,
to
the third age.
Like, we know no one wins here. So it's like,
right, yeah. Right.
We just have to watch it all get set up.
Well, and like by the time, yeah, you know, Minas Tirith, you know, becomes, and you know that we're not talking about Numenor anymore in the third age. There's all these things that like, yeah. So. Yeah. It's like we just know.
Right.
And again, it's the problem with the Rogue One thing, right? Where it's like you add all these characters in and everything. And it's like, well, they're not around in the stories later. Not that we necessarily, you know, Arondir and Bronwyn could absolutely ride off into the sunset and go be on their own and have nothing to do with the ring story. I mean, you know, later
sure,
on.
But then why? But, you know, I'm not here for happy endings.
Exactly. So it just feels like just do the thing and everything. And right. I'm kind of hoping that they end up having this, like, love story that goes really tragic, and maybe they can get a little they might give some, their story might end up giving some nods to the stories of the first age, that like Beren and Luthien and stuff like that, like things where these tragic like elf man love stories that I love, where like the Valar like grant them, you know, lives together and whatever after they die,
yeah,
type
it's
of
like,
thing.
Like, okay, you did it, like
I hope it's something,
yeah, we
poetic.
Don't know. Yeah. I love nothing more than a tragic love story, so
yeah,
definitely.
And that's my hope. Yeah, my hope for them. So I'm oddly the most intrigued by their storyline. And it's weird because it's like they're not anything to do with the books or anything.
But I think that actor is doing a really great job, though. I think he's so.
Okay. He's fine in the show. We will talk about this later, but he presented at the Emmys last night. Oh. And it was not. Oh. Part of it was the writing for him. You know, they just, the bit they wrote for them was so stilted and painful. But anyway, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Poor dude. Yeah. Well, not every good actor can do comedy, though, honestly.
Right, yeah.
It's true.
So maybe he's just not comedic.
He's just not funny.
But he's hot. the only thing that I don't necessarily, like, I don't want the only black elf to become an orc.
That's very valid. Yes.
So, so I need us to have more black elves show up, or, you know what I mean? Or where he escapes, or I don't know what it is, but like, I don't. Like, I want to see.
That's a very good point. Yes.
Like, I really want to see them devolve into orcs, but I don't think the only black elf that we know anything about should be the first one.
Agreed. Yeah, I don't think that's what they're going to do, just because that's how the orcs first came to being, but orcs have been around for a long time. So I don't think that, if they're going to be doing that, they wouldn't be killing the elves like they were in this, like, you know, whatever. I think it would be a little more. Clearly, this Adar character has some idea for a Arondir, like, you know, I don't know. But yeah, I think it would be a bit troublesome if they did do it. And but it has me worrying for him in that way. I'm hoping that we're going to get some Ent intervention with him at some point.
Ooh, Ents. Oh, how fun. Well,
they made it a point to show us an Ent as the comet was coming down.
They did show us an Ent, which I was super excited about.
The Entwives, are the Entwives gone at this point?
Well, we don't really know when the Entwives went missing. It's revert, you know, because by the time we meet an Ent, it is in the third age, and they don't really, I mean, as far as I know, I don't remember if we talked much about Ents beyond that.
Oh my god, what if we find the Entwives? That would be really fun. Yeah,
I would love to see an Entwife, but I love that Ent, like, cuddling up with that tree, being like, oh no, what's that? And his, and he's clearly like, well, when the comet was going by, it went and like put its arm around the tree, and they like cuddled up to each other. It was like, oh no.
I just like the idea. Oh no, what's that?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what they said, I think, you know.
Okay.
In Entish.
Yep. I mean, if anyone would know, it would be you, Matt. You and your family of Ents.
Yes, exactly. I speak Ent. I don't know if you know that, but his armor and their armor is so like wood elf, like Ent face type thing. Like, it would be cool to me if we got something there, but I don't know. And this, you know, the stranger thing, maybe we'll get Ent stuff with him somewhere. I don't know, but I think we're going to get Ents at some point. I'm really excited about it. I hope so. I love an Ent. Representation.
Representation?
Yeah.
Oh.
Did it on that note.
Yes, on that note. All right. Well, speaking of wooden characters and trees.
Oh, God.
Oh, jeez.
I didn't say anything about pine.
It's true. We did not. What does he say? It's oak and ash and, you know, anyway. Yeah. We watched Pinocchio 2022. Jackie, how far did you make it?
About 45 minutes.
Oh, okay. Further than I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matt, I'm guessing you did not tap out.
No, of course not. That's the whole thing.
What did you two think? Well, I'm guessing Jackie, since she tapped out. Matt, what did you think since you finished the whole thing?
What's funny is, I probably hated it the least out of all of us. I did not like it, okay? But okay. I probably hated it the least. What's funny is 45 minutes in was not where I really started to hate it. So I was like, I'm worried. What was it that?
I was just bored.
Bored?
Yeah. Mm. I just was not invested.
I hated it from the first scene.
I really hated the Figaro. I don't know why that was the one that I bumped on the hardest, but like, you can't make a cat cute.
Can we talk about the nightmare creature that is Jiminy Cricket?
Yeah, I can't handle that. Why did they do that?
With the pubescent southern voice, and then like the character design made me so upset, because I was like, Hopper from, you know, A Bug's Life, who is the villain, is more appealing than this. Like, his face is so
For me was they made Cleo all cutesy. Like, the goldfish had like eyelashes and was cute. But then everyone else was not cute for some reason. Everyone either has to be realistic or everyone has to be cutesy. Like, I didn't like this weird character decision where, like, some of them, it was like, clearly for Figaro, they were going for like a real looking cat. And at that point, just get a cat. I don't know. Or do better. Cause we've seen better cats. Like, Jungle Book's cats were better looking.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know.
Everything.
But then Cleo was so cartoony that I was like, I don't get it.
Yeah. I thought Figaro was cute, but I was more bumping on the animation, to be honest. I just thought it was like, I thought the design was cute enough for me. But I wasn't bothered by Jiminy's design. That's really funny. I was bothered by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, but I wasn't.
Both for me. Yeah. Absolutely.
I was bothered by his design. I know it called all of these remakes, it always calls into question like the why of it all, right? But I found myself, I think, pleasantly surprised when they were showing trailer stuff that they were sticking to like close to designs from the original in a lot of ways, or from the animated in a lot of ways. Like, that I was like, oh, kind of cool. Okay, I like that. Like, I was worried that like every other iteration I've ever seen of Pinocchio, like the puppet looks really scary. The CG was something else. I'm just saying, but like the design always ends up looking like, oh, I don't know. Whereas like the Disney animated version like is very appealing looking to me. Mm-hmm. And then a Cricket. Like, if you make a cricket look more like a real cricket, which obviously Hopper has a face that's not a real cricket.
Right, and he's technically a grasshopper, but whatever.
A grasshopper, but it's kind of like, oh, God, like, you know, oh, bug. Whereas, like, Jiminy Cricket, I know he's a bug, but, like, I don't think of him as a bug. He's just, like, this little green.
He's
like,
just a rounded face,
almost like a green little sprite or something. I don't know, even though I know he's a cricket. But so I wasn't bothered by that as much. The animation throughout, I thought, was troubling. The effects in general.
I'm sorry, you didn't find the Pinocchio puppet troubling? That thing is gonna, it has given me nightmares. It is so deeply upsetting to me.
That's funny. Yeah, I didn't do that.
Oh my God. I was just like, there's everything. Everything is wrong with this.
Yeah.
And I figured it's the eyes to me because they are like painted on and painted, they like don't emote. And I was like, no, you need to have like a little bit of beveling here. It needs to be like a little in or out or whatever. And also let him blink. Just let him blink. He's a magic fucking puppet. It's okay to let him blink. Like I, oh my God. Oh, just thinking about it makes my skin crawl.
No, yeah, no, I feel all that. It's all valid criticism. I think I was like, okay, whatever. It was never going to be a thing that I was like going to love, but I was like, okay, cool. But then I thought it was weird that they had songs in it, and some of them they had that were original songs, and then they cut out songs and put in different songs and made Tom Hanks sing a little bit, and he doesn't do that well. And it was just
are we calling
like,
that singing? That's very generous.
Well, I mean, that's what the goal was, right? He was supposed to be like, and it's like, but instead, I know maybe Joseph Gordon-Levitt can't sing, but they cut out like Give a Little Whistle, like, which is one of the big Pinocchio songs talking about his conscience and stuff. And it was just a weird choices to me. I did like the weird little like friendship with the puppet lady. The puppet, like I liked, I didn't like her song and everything, but I liked his little friendship. And until he made the stage catch on fire, I liked the I've Got No Strings scene well enough. All things considered, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't like the animation. I don't like this. I don't like the look of things, but like I could see things that I liked in cinematography and stuff. But then it was like, it really went off the rails for me around Pleasure Island with what's his face?
Oh, Luke Evans.
Luke Evans. And it was like, oh my God, like adding this weird character and then these like shadow monsters and making Luke Evans have songs because he likes to sing. And
I don't know the last time I watched the animated one. I don't hold it in a particularly high regard. I know people do. I just, you know, it's fine. I think part of it is it's ironically one of the darker ones. And it's like a kid, it just like didn't, you know, resonate with me. And so I never watched it again. And also it's somewhat nonsensical. Like I don't, it's just a very bizarre series of plot points to me. So I had no, like, there's no nostalgia in this for me. Yeah. And
it's
so
top 10 for me.
That's fair. Like that's totally fair. But I hated every moment of this film.
Yeah. I can't like Dana, I can't remember the last time I watched it. Honestly.
I thought about rewatching it after to be like, what happened here? I was so burned by this
ride recently.
Oh, I don't think I cannot remember the last time I went on that ride.
I was going to say, one of my genuine fears, well, it's not like a fear, but like worries, I guess, is that that ride at Disneyland is going to get replaced by something else because it's the only Fantasyland ride, aside from Toad, I guess, the only Fantasyland ride that hasn't gotten like a makeover.
When you say replace, though, do you mean like...
It also doesn't have a line ever.
Like a new a different movie. Like
right, but because they've just re-upped it, you know, they could like slap a Tom Hanks Geppetto in there, but...
Well, yeah, and that would be troubling, but I guess I... one thing that I was okay with the movie... I'm not okay with it after watching it, but I was okay with its existence as a remake was that, like you said, you don't hold it in a high regard, but you can't remember the last time you've seen it. I think I would wager most children have not seen it. And so I was like, if this was good and it got Pinocchio in front of a new generation and it like revitalized a little bit of a like for the story, then it might give my ride a little bit of hope. It's not like my favorite ride of all time, but I just would like it to stay. And they've already, Village House used to be Pinocchio and they've already themed that to Beauty and the Beast. And I'm like, they're already erasing. But, and I was like, no, please stay. So I was hoping this would be good to like, you know, give it a little zhuzh, but
I just can't imagine. Again, coming from someone who does not particularly like the animated one, I can't imagine somebody being like, you know what? This is my opportunity to show somebody Pinocchio for the first time. I'm going to show them this version. Like, what monster has done that?
I don't think it'd be someone like being like, okay, now's the time to show my child Pinocchio. But I think it's like your kid wants to watch something and you go on to Disney Plus to find something and it's a new
movie. Yeah, so pick the original Pinocchio.
Sure, but some people might not even, it's up there, it's new, and the kid might be like, oh, watch that. Okay, you put it on. I don't know. Like, it's, you know,
that
I don't know how these things happen.
Sad for them, and their Disney Plus subscription should be revoked.
Listen,
I was going to say their parenting license should be revoked, but I'll be more generous and say.
Yeah, but there's a thing that I saw that was like, welcome to the Villains Club or something with really horrible art and all this whatever, and it's got like Ursula and stuff on it, and if a kid wanted to watch that, I doubt most parents are like, no, you're going to watch Little Mermaid instead. They're going to put it on, because it's like the kid saying, that one. You know, if it's
the Villains Club,
I don't know if it's called that. It was some villain thing. It's like hop on board or whatever. And it shows like Ursula, like someone in a car or something. And I was like, I hate this. I just saw it as a new thing.
But again, my thing is, you are the, if your kid is young enough that they have not seen Pinocchio, you have control over that streaming service. Like, they should not be navigating that UI themselves.
I mean, the thing is,
you
is
do.
Not-
Yeah, but you I have control. Play. I think you open the app, and if the kid says points,
no, you say you
that,
say get out of the room.
I agree. I understand that, and I'm a purist, and I'd say no, my kid. Yeah,
Dana has not hang out with any 3-year olds recently, though.
That's very true.
Sometimes you will do fucking anything to get them to stop screaming. Yeah.
I get it.
If they
want to
watch some bullshit thing, you put it on and you're
I
like.
I know. It just makes me so. Like, this is, and again, this is coming off of D23, where we sat through that panel, and it's just remake after remake after remake. And I'm like, if they're going to be like this, I have yet to enjoy a single of these reimaginings. And I find them creatively bankrupt. And the fact that this is the latest one, and then they're like, by the way, we're going to announce however many more. Really makes me like deeply upset.
Yeah.
And I'm with you there. And I think, and even to your point, if you say like the parents are like, oh, you're going to watch the original, it still would lead to the same result that I want, which is kids to like.
Sure.
So it's still something where like, I just mean like this is one of those ones where the original is old enough to where I could, if you were doing good job with these remakes, I could understand being like, I don't understand making Lion King, right? I could understand being like, oh, yeah, sure. That movie from the 40s. You know what I mean? Like, okay. I know there's been other versions, but it's been a long time, right? So, okay, cool. But yeah, I mean, I don't defend the film. I guess I defend the idea of the film if we're in a world where we're doing these remakes, but I would wish they would all stop as well.
But I think you should remake it in a way that's modern and interesting, you know?
I'm like, if you're going to do this, you need to add something to it. And I didn't find that this version had anything interesting to update to it. It just was scarier in a unintentional way.
Well, I just think, I mean, I'm mostly just sad that Disney isn't taking the time to do more original stories, you know, just like everyone, right?
Yeah.
I think like Disney Animation is the only entity of theirs that's really pushing out like original content still.
Well, Pixar, you know? Still sometimes.
Well, Pixar, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like the Disney name.
I guess the Disney
name. Yeah. If we want to be specific about it. Yeah, absolutely.
Because Marvel and Star Wars are, but like, you know what I mean? Like the.
Right.
And it's just like, because Enchanted is an excellent film. Am I looking forward to Disenchanted? Yes. I actually think that the thing we saw at D23 made me want to see it more than I did before. But I would love to have more content like that, you know? Instead of making Hocus Pocus 2, let's make a new Halloween movie or new witches movie or new whatever with our resources and our time and our creatives. And, you know, they just have so much creative talent. And yeah, it'd just be more interesting to get introduced to new things.
And I don't understand where the fear comes from, right? Because it's not like I guess some of the remakes have done pretty well, like exceptionally well, actually.
Yeah, they do really well overseas.
Right. But it's like, if somebody said a new Disney movie's coming out, and even if it was like a lower budget, whatever, people would go see it, you know? Like, there's no world in which people are like, I'm not going to go see that.
Are we forgetting some flops or something? I don't really remember.
We must be. Because I know there was like...
Flops of
live action.
Their originals and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they have done things that don't end up performing nearly as well as these do. Like, I mean, even like... I mean, obviously it's a different style movie than these, but like The Queen of Katwe, like that, no one went and saw that movie. But
or
it was,
like,
you know, with Lupita Nyong'o.
You know, Wrinkle in Time, right?
I saw adaptation.
Yeah, that's true. Thing. Wrinkle in Time was inexpensive.
Yeah.
But I think the thing about Wrinkle in Time is it's not, I mean, it's an adaptation. It's not original.
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
And to be clear, the, you know, Queen of Katwe is like based on a
true story.
So it's not that it's like a, but I just, that was just one that came to mind real quick, but. They have done certain films that they just don't, I don't think they land as hardly as.
But I think some of it's also like they don't promote them as like, this is a flagship. Mm-hmm. I will say Wrinkle in Time is an exception to that. You're absolutely right. But like Queen of Katwe did not get the same level of promotion as Pinocchio even probably did.
Mm-hmm. I was like, and you're forgetting Artemis Fowl.
But again, adaptation.
I know.
It's an adaptation too. But yeah,
Like, I'm looking at their releases, and so many of them, I mean, part of the other problem with this list is it's like all their National Geographic or Disney Nature releases. So I'm like, this is a very long
list. Well, they had one with a dog at some point kind of recently, I thought, like a guy and a dog. I thought it could be totally different too.
Was that the Channing Tatum one?
Are you talking about
Not Call of the Wild. That's obviously.
Yeah. I was like, with Harrison.
No, it was. I forget. But they don't make them, I don't think, as many as they
Remember did. Eight Below? That there. Did pretty well, didn't it? That was cute.
What was Eight Below?
Wasn't that Paul Walker?
With the
sled dogs or whatever.
The sled dogs.
I don't remember that. I have a vague recollection of it.
I remember watching it, and I remember it being cuter than I expected it to be. Mm-hmm. There was a sequel to that, so it must have been good enough for a sequel.
I guess. I don't know. It just looking
whatever
at the
that
thing
means,
and,
you know. But yeah,
we're done yeah, well enough. Yeah.
Queen of Katwe and Wrinkle in Time, and that's like. Those are some of the only ones. And then it's weird because there's like The Finest Hours gets lumped into this list, but I'm like, yeah. Is that like, it's a very different film than.
I think they're starting to look at it as they're doing these acquisitions and it's, and things where now, I mean, I know they were doing this long before they acquired 20th Century, right? But mm-hmm. I think they're looking at it as the Disney live action umbrella is focusing on Disney properties these days now. You know what I mean? Yeah. More than it's
right pre-existing
on.
Ones,
and they have because they have their other entities doing they are doing it all. It's just mm-hmm. not yeah, through yeah, this yeah. name. So, in that respect, listen, I don't need any of these to exist. But in that respect, I don't need Disney to be doing other live action stuff that has nothing to do with Disney at this point. If they don't want to, if 20th Century is going to do it, and if they, you know,
yeah, yeah,
I don't know.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
But I hear everything. I mean, I agree with you. I've liked my share of things from these movies. I did enjoy Cruella a lot, even though I wouldn't call that a remake. It's a prequel type of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But leading into, I think if they really are doing this dreadful sequel, it will be 101 Dalmatians. I detest Maleficent, but you know, I liked story things that came out of the live action Beauty and the Beast. Do I think it's like the most amazing quality film? No, but I liked story points that came out of there that I think enhanced the story personally.
I mean, there's everyone's favorite. There's Jungle Cruise. Let's not forget.
Yeah.
Jungle Cruise.
Yeah. The ride based.
I liked Jungle Book fine. Yeah. I remember. But yeah, I haven't really watched it much. And then I liked Cinderella fine, I think. But I haven't really watched it either. So I guess that speaks something. But I did like Cruella, and I have watched that.
I think you are right, and I probably need to mentally reframe it in that Walt Disney Pictures has decided this is what we stand for, and other things come out under other branches or other – and which has always been the case, actually. You know, I can't remember who it was, like, who their previous one was. I want to say Touchstone, but I don't think that's them. But either way, yeah. It just makes me very sad that I would rather at least then have, like, these origin stories or whatever it is than just a complete – not quite shot for shot, but in some cases shot for shot remake.
Yeah, I feel that. And you're getting it with Mufasa.
Joy, lucky me.
The story you want, you know. Exactly. No, and that's where I think, not that we have to go into Cruella again, like we already talked about that on here, but that's where I think that was successful in that it was like, oh,
yeah,
let's
it
just
had something
do this
different to say.
New story about right. this character, even though it's not really the character, but you know, and they tried to do that a little bit with Maleficent, but they did it so badly, in my opinion. But yeah, I think there's a world where you can do some of them, these like shot for shot, because this was largely like sequence for sequence for sequence, this movie.
That's what
very,
I thought.
Yeah, it's...
I recognize that like the Luke Evans thing, I was like, this is not the... This
yeah, is- and you don't... They added things and the friendship with the puppet, but that puppet that he becomes friends with, like he dances with her in Stromboli's show. It's just you don't really get to know the girl behind her, but like,
yeah.
You know, so that element... Monstro is a sperm whale, not a sea monster. That looks awful. Yeah. So like, but again, I'm like, okay, well, but a sperm whale would not eat people. So I don't know. Like, so I understood, okay, cool. But I don't know. I hated everything to do with Monstro. And by that point I was like, what is happening here? I hate this. But yeah, I don't know.
I hated it so much.
It doesn't need to happen. And listen, if they continue to make these straight to Disney Plus, to me, that is the equivalent of like the straight to VHS sequels we were getting of the animated films. The
I guess
night.
That,
exactly.
Yeah.
No, and so whatever. For some reason, when I get to watch them for free on Disney Plus, I'm less insulted than when they go to theaters.
I guess.
Yeah. I paid $30 for Mulan.
God.
So I can watch
well,
this
you know, those were very desperate times. So
they were desperate times. I needed new content like yeah. mad. So, you know.
Yeah. That was a rough era. Still a rough era. But yeah. It just makes me sad.
No, I feel you.
Yeah. That's what it comes down to. The other thing that makes me very angry about this film is now I am concerned about Guillermo del Toro's version of it.
Yeah.
Only because I was like, oh, I don't think I like the story of Pinocchio.
yeah. And it is dark and gross.
No,
and
no.
Scary,
I'm
so
fine
like...
with dark, gross, and scary in this capacity. I just find it boring.
Mm. Do you like AI?
The Haley Joel Osment Jude Law movie?
It's basically Pinocchio.
Oh, Yeah.
Sci-fi Pinocchio.
I had a weird theater experience with that one, so I don't have like.
I like the first hour 40 of AI.
I don't remember. I
didn't love the ending.
I think I cried during it, which was weird for me because I didn't cry a lot during movies at that point. But yeah, it was fine. But that's the thing. It's like, I think that is because it's an adaptation, like a more broad adaptation of it. It's one thing. But like this, I assume Guillermo's will be like, there will be a Monstro sequence and there will be, you know, Pleasure Island. Is that what it's called? Pleasure Island?
Yeah.
And like all that stuff. So I'm interested to see how it goes.
I will say on that note, but you know, before we go on it, that I was happy that Pleasure Island was children instead of just little boys.
Yeah.
Because it always was a little bit troubling in my mind they were kidnapping little boys and turning them into asses.
That
to me felt a little, it's still troubling because it's obviously a disturbing thing they're doing, but it made me feel better that they like mixed the gender up and it could be very allegorical for.
Great. Now we can abuse all.
Yeah. Equal opportunity abusers. No, but
great,
it just,
wonderful.
The idea of.
Yeah, like, yeah, I get it.
It's always a little like, that's a little concerning. Even though one of my favorite Disney scenes is when he turns into the donkey when they're playing pool. I love that scene. And this did not, I mean, because he looked terrible, but they tried to recreate one of my favorite shots in Disney, which is like when you see the shadow of him turning into the donkey, it's very disturbing. And this, they did that, but it was like, and then he turned around and it was like, oh God, this is terrible.
Yeah.
But yeah. And that seagull, man. Ooh.
Oh my God. Is that seagull in?
No.
No.
There are seagulls, but no seagull.
But there's
like
no like character seagull. Also, Keegan-Michael Key's fox character. Is he in?
Honest John, yeah.
Okay. Because I'm.
Yeah, he and Gideon the cat are both.
I didn't enjoy it, but I was like, oh, you are not phoning it in. Like, you are trying your damnedest.
I was okay with his acting. I did not like his singing.
No.
He was so just like,
this is the thing. Why are they going to cast? Why did they cast all these people who cannot
sing? That's what I don't understand. Is like, you should cast at least people who can sing if you're going to have them sing.
I want to move off the topic, but I also have so many more questions about like the voices.
But to be honest, that's like part of the racists, you know, being upset about Haley as Ariel. Make me laugh because I'm like, at least you're getting an Ariel who can sing.
Right. Although TBD on her acting skills.
Yeah, we don't know.
I don't know, we just haven't seen them yet.
We just don't know. But I'm just saying at least that version of the song.
Yeah, at least there's no question of whether or not she can sing. But
you know,
but that's my thing. I was like, why cast Tom Hanks? Also, why does Geppetto, the only one who doesn't seem to have, and I guess Keegan Michael, the only one who doesn't have this like thick Italian accent in this stupid city? Because Tom Hanks can't do an accent. That's why we. Anyway.
Well, that's the thing too. Is Joseph Gordon-Levitt? The reason he bugged me so much is acting was like I could see him in the recording booth doing it, so I wasn't buying any of it. But also he was trying so hard to sound like the original Jiminy Cricket.
Is that what the original? I do not remember what the original Jiminy.
Yeah.
There
were times where I was like, "Oh, you got really close there." Like he was trying to make it his own, but sound like him. That I was like, "Okay," like it wasn't working for me at all. Right? As at least you know, with Honest John, he was very much doing his own thing. So that's
again
good.
Would prefer.
Yeah, you know, whatever. It's a reimagining, right? So go ahead. Right. It's a delicate line.
Yes. All right, well, in addition to that nightmare-inducing film, we are watching what? What else did we watch this week, if anything? I know we will caveat, we were busy. We were at D23.
I watched Gutsy on Apple TV Plus.
Oh, the Clinton Show? Mm-hmm. Ooh, is it good?
You watched all of it? I've only watched 2 episodes so far.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it. Yeah, I say take that with a grain of salt. I'm practically a Hillary Clinton fanboy, so it's like,
What do you mean practically?
I guess not grain of salt to you two. I just mean to the world that I'm like, she could probably stand up there and like read from the dictionary. And I'd be
I'm saying, why would you say practically? Like, just be like, I'm a Hillary Clinton fan?
Fanboy, I guess. I'm not like, you know, but yes, I am a fan.
Oh, I'm a fangirl for her. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So.
And so it was amazing.
But I love getting to know Chelsea, actually, because we don't really know her all that well. At least I don't.
She's definitely in the shadow of her family.
And I think like,
she's pretty, you know.
I don't talks a lot. Yes, yeah. I don't know. I don't really. I'm not really on Twitter, but I really liked when she. Well, I guess I shouldn't give anything away, right? I don't know.
We'll spoiler alert it. Go ahead.
She was talking to Amy Schumer about. Well, it was a couple other comedians about how she never really liked comedy because she used to be a punchline when she was a child.
Oh,
Yeah, that wasn't with Amy. That was with that other group.
That was with the other two group. That's why I was like, oh, no, it was a couple other comedians. Yeah. She was talking about, and I was like, oh, my God, I remember that. They kept calling her the ugly duckling. I remember all of that stuff about her. And it makes me sad now, right? Because we just kind of let ourselves make fun of a child. Like, that's really gross. She was like, well, I didn't care when Rush Limbaugh said it because I knew he hated us. But, you know, when the cast of SNL is making fun of you, you know, it's very, it feels very personal, you know? And I think, you know, and of course, being that young, it's so, I mean, having to go through puberty in front of the whole world's got to be the worst.
Yeah. No, I know. I think a fascinating docu-series or documentary would be sitting down with presidents of previous, or children of previous presidents and president.
Yeah.
George Bush's children went through
it. I was like, then you have to have the Bushes. And
I know,
like,
but
I
but they went through their share of, like, those, and they were innocent parties. Like, you know, it's like, these
well,
children
were
innocent.
Well, they were really
to their...
great to the Obama sisters, apparently. Mm-hmm. Did you read about any of that?
Yeah.
Apparently, I don't remember exactly what happened. Something happened, and the Bush twins reached out to them and gave them all this advice and were like, I don't know. They went on vacation together, kind of, or something. So
yeah,
it was, like, they really cute. Like, they were like actual friends and really trying to help them.
Yeah, you know, because I said this even, like, we don't have to get too deep into our politics, but I even said this about, like, you know, in the heat of all this Trump stuff, it's like this kid, Barron Trump, like his kids, I don't want to hear from these older kids because they were adults anyway, and I don't want to hate them. But his kid, Barron, it's like that kid is a victim of circumstance. Like, we don't know. He might turn out to be a tyrant and a terrible person like his father. But, like, when we meet him in the White House at, like, 8 years old, it's like, come on. Like, he should be off limits. Like, it's not his fault. And so, and the you know, Obama should have been off limits, Chelsea, all of them. And so that would be interesting. But Wanda Sykes makes a really interesting point in that episode that I really liked, where she was like, when it's talking about things that should be off limits and maybe shouldn't be, she's like, I'm not here to tell anyone what should or shouldn't be off limits. But she was like, as a comedian, I always try to attack upwards. You don't pick on the people who have less than you or who are marginalized or who are.
Yeah.
So don't make these trans jokes. Don't make these gay jokes. Don't make these racially driven jokes. But you can poke fun at the president. You can poke fun at people that are like, so it's like, I was like, oh, wow, that's really fascinating. I never thought about it that way. But that is a lot of times the funniest stuff is you're like these people who you're looking at in a different sphere of your own, but upwards rather than.
I mean, I think it's applicable across the board, right? It's just like punching down is not cool.
It turns into bullying. Right. You know what I mean? Right. Like, I thought, but I never thought about it. And I was like, I'll leave it to Wanda Sykes to expand my mind.
It was very cool. Like, I don't know. I think they ask really good questions and they sort of really listen to these different women. It's very thought provoking. It's a cool series. Like, if you like docuseries and you like learning about people, then this is something you should definitely watch. It's a really cool, informal feeling, you know, people just talking.
And genuine too.
And genuine. Like, it just really feels like it's real.
Yeah. And they were smart to start with that episode, the comedy, because it goes into some darker places. It's pretty, pretty heavy.
I do love sort of Unleashed Hillary, where she was just like, no fucks are to be given. Like, here
we go. Yeah, I love her. I mean, I've always loved her, but I actually have a signed poster from the first time she ran for president.
Ah, very cool.
But obviously.
I have continued to watch The Patient, which is that Steve Carell, Donald Gleason, kidnappy, maybe murdery show on Hulu. It's very good. It's very short, which is kind of a bummer because it's only 28-minute episodes or 25-minute episodes and it comes out weekly. And I'm like, everyone more? But it does kind of make me reconsider the whole, like, binge model where I'm like, oh, would I be as invested in this if I had it all at once? Probably not. Like, I like watching the mystery unravel. And then the other major thing I watched was the Emmys, which didn't even realize were airing on Peacock because I was like, I just resigned myself to be like, I'm not going to watch the Emmys. I'm too tired.
Oh, and it was?
Then, yeah. You didn't miss much. It was.
No, I mean, I forgot about it until I saw people in their outfits on Twitter.
Yeah, I was like,
well, you're on internet anyway, right?
No, that's right. Yeah.
So you couldn't have done anything. Well, I guess on your phone, maybe. But
on my phone, I was scrolling and I could see it. So.
Well, I was like,
you could have. I mean, you could have done Peacock on the phone, but that'd be like annoying.
Right. At that point.
Pretty desperate. I was getting pretty desperate, honestly.
That's valid. But I was trying to think, I was like, should we cover it? Should we not? And then I like tuned in for a few minutes. I was like, nope, we don't need to hardcore cover this. It was nothing spectacular. I was happy for the Squid Game team. And I was happy for Lizzo, who was
Lizzo's speech was great. I watched that this morning.
Yes, it was great.
And it's company.
Yeah, but it was, you know, underwhelming. Like, I didn't feel like anything was super, again, aside from Squid Game. And
yeah, I saw like highlights and stuff, but you know, it was like, yeah. But yeah, the Lizzo was fun. That was my old company. So a couple of old colleagues were standing on the stage. It's nice to see.
Yeah.
Saw them. People, colleagues that I like.
Yeah.
And I was really, really thrilled for them. So yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing that will be relevant to Jackie's interests, I started 90 Day Fiancé Happily Ever After is back. Oh, and also Sister Wives came back.
Did the dating one come back too? Single Life.
Yes, sorry, Single Life is back. Both Happily Ever After and Single Life are back. So it's like a dual.
Yeah, I watched like half of a Single Life episode. I got bored in the middle of it, but.
Yeah, it's not as great this season.
Yeah.
I'm kind of worried about
I just don't like What's Her Face with the curly blonde hair.
Oh, yes. I don't like any of them is the thing. Like this is it's a cast of villains essentially.
Yeah.
And like you're not rooting for any of these people. And also, I'm not gonna lie, there's like a competency question that I have about some of them that, you know, generally speaking, I apply to the show, but I'm also like, oh, this is
I
don't know if you should I don't know if this is I actually Matt, you are the right person to ask about this. Do you know, is there like I don't know, what are the ethics of like, are there tests for, like, are you legally competent to make some of these decisions in terms of reality TV casting? Probably
not. You do psych evaluations.
Oh. Are they mandatory, though?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
Because a lot of it's more...
It's a liability on the production side.
Yeah, I don't know if it's as... I don't know if it's as geared toward, like, oh, can you make sound decisions, blah, blah, as much as it's about, like, are you going to be someone who's going to cause a lawsuit for us? Or are you gonna, like, you know, the kind of, like... Are you mentally fit to like, you know, deal with stress and like, I don't know. But so I've never been present for one of them, of course. So I don't know.
In this case, it's more like, it's not that they're all going to be like a danger to anyone. That's not the concern necessarily. It's more just like you are making some very bad decisions. And I don't know if you're being egged on by this scenario or what, but. And then it gets weird with these like later in the cycle ones where they've been on the show a bunch where they're like, oh, it's now like an income source, right? So you have an incentive to continue to be on the franchise. Some of that, exacerbating it? Yeah.
You know, they're expected to be a certain way when they're on the show.
Right. Or they're like playing it up because they're like, oh, this is what
that's what I mean. Like, I don't know that I would not put it above production doing that, right? But I think that it's a symbiotic thing where like they know that this is the character that keeps them getting invited back.
Right. Or I think some of them don't know how to delineate that it's a character versus like this is the behavior that got engaged with as opposed to
The production, I will say the production company does want the, lack of a better term, the crazy, I guess. They want that to make the show that the network's going to like. The network is the one, from my experience, that is typically very buttoned up about like background check and psych eval and all the things and saying like, is this going to turn into, because if there's a lawsuit of some sort or something brought up.
Right. You want problem. Due diligence, you want coverage, you want all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But the production company absolutely will bait and egg on and do things I'll say that.
Encourage watchable behaviors. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just like, I feel like they've found people who just pass some of those tests. And it's like, ugh. Anyway.
Yeah. The unfortunate reality of reality television is that people's realities are not usually that interesting. So you have to take it with a grain of salt on how real you think what's going on always is and how much intervention there may be.
Anyway, that's what I was watching. Like, classiest of classy affairs. Yes. But that is it for this week. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, as per usual, to Jackie and Matt. And now a couple of super quick follow-up points. So the actor who plays the magician's assistant in She-Hulk Episode 4 is named Leon Lamar, and he was born in 1919, which makes him 104 years old at present, which is truly wild. And then as for Disney and their studio structure, so Touchstone Pictures did indeed used to be a film production label of the Walt Disney Studios. There was also Buena Vista Distribution. They've had a very complicated distribution structure over the years, but they seem to be sort of paring it down these days and also looking at a division between streaming and theatrical, et cetera, et cetera. That has been it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, we would love it if you could leave us a rating or a review or even consider subscribing.